Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins, and man, do we have a show for y'all today. It seems like this week, every single legal problem, lawsuit, everything that Donald Trump is facing got so much worse for him this week. Whether it's the fraud trial in Manhattan, the Georgia investigation, obviously what's happening in Manhattan with District Attorney Alvin Bragg, the lawsuit filed against him by E. Jean Carroll, the documents case, the election case, all of it got so much worse. And I will be breaking down each and every one of those cases and the latest developments for you on this week's show. And don't forget, if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So I guess we've got to start at the beginning this week. Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan District Attorney, is going to indict Donald Trump on Tuesday, or at least that's what Donald Trump announced to the world on Saturday. As we all know, Tuesday came and went, no indictments. Obviously, no indictments Monday, no indictments Wednesday, and in fact, on Wednesday, the grand jury actually canceled their hearing on Donald Trump. So that was an interesting development. We still don't quite know why that particular hearing was canceled on Wednesday, but all we know is that at least as of this podcast recording, Donald Trump has yet to be indicted. But as I said, on Saturday, he made the big announcement, you know, the whole hullabaloo on Truth Social, blah, 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 fake investigators, protest, protest, I'm going to be indicted Tuesday. And so far, it has yet to come to fruition, but pretty much everybody, left, right, and center, understands an indictment is most likely imminent. So, here is what is happening with that particular investigation. Obviously, I've talked about it in recent weeks, so I don't want to rehash everything. But, you know, the basic nuts and bolts, it's the payment to Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, who did go to jail for this, along with a couple other items. Orchestrated the payment to Stormy Daniels. He then set up a shell company, which Donald Trump reimbursed him with funds through the Trump Organization. They tried to write it off as legal expenses, and they falsified business documents, allegedly. You know, we gotta say allegedly, because they have not technically been convicted of that, the Trump Organization or Donald Trump himself. So allegedly falsified business documents to hide the payment from Trump to Michael Cohen. And that brings us to where we are. So the falsification of the business documents in the state of New York is only a misdemeanor. In order to make it a felony charge, Alvin Bragg has to show that that misdemeanor was committed in connection with another crime. At that point, he can raise it to the level of being a felony offense, which is where the payment to Stormy Daniels comes in, because that is viewed as an in-kind campaign contribution, according to the conviction of Michael Cohen, and it exceeded the legal limits and was not reported. That is a federal crime, you know, a federal elections commission. They monitor, they police all of that. So what Bragg has to do, basically, in order to secure not just an indictment, but the conviction, let's go ahead and assume at this point that Trump is indicted for this. What Bragg will have to show in order to raise this to the level of a felony and secure a conviction, he will have to prove that the falsification of the business documents, the misdemeanor, was committed to cover up another crime. That crime being the in-kind excessive campaign contribution. So if Bragg can connect those two points, which honestly shouldn't be that hard, but if he can show that Trump falsified the business documents so that the FEC would not know he made the campaign contribution, then he's toast at that point, you know, legally speaking. Now, whether or not, again, let's assume indictments are happening right this second, or they've already happened by the time you're listening to this. The conviction is what's important. Now, these two crimes, you know, the falsification of the documents, the in-kind campaign contribution, separately, basically not things people go to jail for. They're really not, unfortunately. Like I said, the falsification of business documents in New York is a misdemeanor. You know, we're talking about the business capital of the United States, and if you falsify your documents there, it's just a misdemeanor, pay a fine and move on with it. Explains a lot about Wall Street, if you think about it. But will he get Donald Trump to go to jail? I don't think so. I really think even if he secures the conviction, even if it survives the appeal, I don't think, given the severity of these crimes, I don't think he would get an actual jail sentence. So the thought of Donald Trump rotting away behind bars, watching the next presidential election from a jail cell, I don't think that's possible, even if you get the conviction, because these are not major crimes. Now, had Bragg not killed the investigation into the bank fraud and the tax fraud that was ready to go to indictment when Bragg took over from Cyrus Vance, then that would have resulted in jail time. But he squashed that investigation, which of course led to the resignation of Mark Pomerantz and the other prosecutor. And Pomerantz has made it clear they had the indictments drafted. Okay, they weren't just in the planning stages. They weren't saying, okay, I think we can indict him. They had them written. They were ready to go. Alvin Bragg took over, killed it. And we still don't have an answer as to why. And that to me is just mind-blowing. Why would you do that? Like, get rid of this investigation that's been going on for well over a year. They have all the evidence laid out. They have the indictments written for you. All you got to do is basically turn it in. It's like you're in school and some other kid wrote your paper for you. All you have to do is hand it to the teacher. Well, I guess that's probably an unethical example, but you get the point. All the legwork was done. And Bragg said no, and instead he goes for this crime that, one, already wasn't a felony. He would have to connect it to another to raise it to the level of a felony, and it's still a far weaker offense than the bank fraud and the tax fraud. So none of it really makes any sense as to why you wouldn't go after the big crime that was already basically proven for you, but that's what Bragg did. And that's the situation we're in now. He does have an uphill battle. I mean, again, even if we get the indictments to link the two crimes, to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, even with a, you know, New York liberal jury, which is what you're going to have, it's still going to be an uphill battle that likely will not end in a prison sentence for Donald Trump. But don't tell that to the Republicans, right? They're freaking the hell out. They are so angry about all of this that you have three chairmen from the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. You have Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan, Oversight Committee Chair James Comer, and House Administration Committee Chairman Brian Steele, who have all said in a signed letter, we want Alvin Bragg to come on in and tell us about his investigation. By God, we want answers, they say. Well, the fun thing about that is that you're not going to get answers. You see, the House of Representatives, of course, is very powerful. They're able to conduct a lot of different kinds of investigations, but that doesn't mean they can conduct any kind of investigation that they want. Because Alvin Bragg, as the district attorney for the city of Manhattan in the state of New York, receives $0 in federal funding. And because he is also not appointed by a federal official of any kind, the House of Representatives has zero jurisdiction over Alvin Bragg's office. So if they wanted to issue a subpoena to him, which is probably where we will end up with this, he has every legal right to challenge it, as they have no authority to compel his testimony, because there is not a piece of legislation that they could write that would affect Alvin Bragg directly, because he is not a federal government employee. He is an employee of the state of New York. So these Republicans in the House can whine and cry and risk their reputations, you know, trying to defend Donald Trump all they want. But at the end of the day, there is literally nothing they can do to stop Alvin Bragg. So there's one thing. Now, Trump, of course, in addition to his Saturday announcement, he also came out and accused Alvin Bragg of interfering in a presidential election. Interference, he says, just like they said about Twitter in 2020. You interfered with the election because the DNC asked you to take down the naked pictures of Hunter Biden. They didn't even ask you to take them down. They asked you if they violated your terms of service. So he's already laying that groundwork. They're interfering. So when he loses in 2024, he can say, well, it's because Alvin Bragg. I would have won. But Alvin Bragg came and interfered. And then, of course, he never has to accept the reality that the voters have rejected him basically three times now. So he's doing that. His lawyer, Alina Haba, she was asked earlier in the week about his post on Truth Social predicting his indictment on Tuesday, which again didn't come to fruition. And instead of answering that question, here's what Alina Haba said when she was asked by CNN, hey, your client says he's being indicted Tuesday. What do you have to say about that? And she said this. I think it's a very important thing that he does, quite honestly. We've got Hunter Biden, who we've seen has ties to China. We have his dead brother's wife, who's now, we've heard this week, has been funneling money from China as well as and is on payroll. So what happens is the Democrats now have to pull the wool over our heads. She was literally asked about her client predicting his imminent indictment. And the first words out of her mouth were essentially, Hunter Biden! And then, of course, she goes on to slander Beau Biden's widow. Like, let me read that for you again. We have his dead brother's wife, who's now, we've heard this week, has been funneling money from China as well and is on payroll. You're accusing a non-public figure, which means the bar to prove defamation is rather low. You're accusing her of funneling money from China in illegal activity. You're accusing her as an attorney on national television of a crime. I hope to God that she sues Alina Haba for defamation, because that statement right there that I just read for you twice, that is defamation, plain and simple. Alina Haba should be taken to the cleaners and drained of every penny she has ever earned in her entire life, because that is a horrendous statement. You are slandering this woman, and you deserve to lose everything because of it. I am sorry, folks. It pisses me off. It pisses me off to read that statement, especially when it's your client, Alina, who's facing an indictment. Hunter Biden isn't facing an indictment. Beau Biden's widow isn't facing an indictment. Your guy is. But you can't bring yourself to talk about that now, can you? Because you're a piece of crap lawyer. I mean, let's not forget, by the way, that before Donald Trump hired her, Alina Haba was the lawyer for a friggin' parking garage. That's her legal experience. Like, oh no, you parked your car too close to mine. Oh no, you overcharged me for parking overnight. Oh, I'll take you to court. That's who she is. That's her expertise. She's gonna get her ass handed to her in court because she's a friggin' moron. And then after that, I hope that Beau Biden's widow sues her for everything that she has. And you know what? Speaking of Alina Haba, and I think this is a good time to switch on over to another legal problem that Donald Trump has. This week, Judge Arthur Engoron in the state of New York slapped down Alina Haba's idiotic request to delay the fraud trial for Donald Trump and his children, Junior, Eric, and Ivanka. She wanted it delayed from October 2nd, which is when it's set for now, because she claims the New York Attorney General's office just gave us so gosh darn much info, so many documents, that we don't even have time to go through them. Now, she admitted when she, you know, filed this to let's go ahead and delay it, she said that, you know, there's a couple hundred thousand documents, and at best, we can only go through one person, she said, can go through 250 to 400 a day. So I crunched the numbers. Do you know how long it would take if they had a team of 10 people? It would take them like fewer than 60 days. If they had 15 people, you're looking at less than a month. And they got 6 months out to try it. Like, you have more than enough time. And guess what, Alina? If you don't have the staff to go through that many documents, do you know what you can do? This is really easy. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. You can hire people. Yeah, you can actually put ads online. You can put ads on those job hunting websites. And you can actually hire people with experience going through legal documents. I mean, you know, you're in New York. There's lots of people that have that kind of experience. And you can hire them to go through documents. And you know how I know that? Not just from being a person with common sense, but that actually comes from working in a law firm for 19 years. Yeah, you know, that's what law firms do. That's what good law firms do. When you have a big case and you have a lot of documents and you don't quite have the people, you hire more people. And the people go through the documents, and the paralegals go through the documents, and the lawyers go through the documents. Sometimes it does mean you have to work late nights. Sometimes it means you have to come in on the weekends. Oh, dear. Which, of course, is why Judge Arthur Engoron, as I said, slapped this down. The judge said, quote, "The trial date is written in stone." He also said the case is complex, but it's not complicated. It all boils down to whether the statements of financial condition are true, and the rest, you know, is all commentary. So Alina Haba went to court and said, "Oh, I just can't read all this much." And the judge said, "I don't care. You have plenty of time. Hire people if you need to. Go through the documents. Be ready for trial. It's the state of New York. They have a 6-month ready time for criminal trials in the state of New York, which means if criminal charges are filed against you in the state of New York, which is what this is with Trump and his kids, it's only a 6-month window between when the charges come and when the trial can start. That's by New York law. So this shouldn't have come as a shock to Alina Haba and the other attorneys on the case. One of them is a guy named Clifford Robert. Y'all know how New York law works. You know you only have 6 months from the time charges are filed. So you shouldn't be like, "Oh my God, what are we going to do?" You're going to do what you would do in any other case. And if y'all were good, experienced lawyers, you would know that. But you're not. And that's why you're freaking out, because this is a bigger case than either one of you have most likely handled in your entire career. Definitely a bigger case than Alina Haba has ever tried. And she doesn't know what to do. She is terrified. Plus, I mean, she's got to get ready to do all her TV hits all the time, so she doesn't have enough time to go out there and prep and read documents and mark them up and all that. Well, guess what? Nobody cares. It's the law in New York, and you got to deal with it. So now we've covered Alvin Bragg. We've covered the New York Attorney General's fraud lawsuit, both of which, of course, as I said, have gone bad for Donald Trump. So let's keep it in New York for a minute, and let's talk about the E. Jean Carroll sexual assault lawsuit filed against Donald Trump. On Monday, Judge Lewis Kaplan in Manhattan reaffirmed a ruling from a week and a half-ish ago. I say week and a half-ish, it's about a week, 2 weeks ago, where he issued the initial ruling, and then he reaffirmed it on Monday that the infamous Access Hollywood grab 'em by the genitals tape can, in fact, be played at E. Jean Carroll's sexual assault lawsuit against Donald Trump. He also ruled that two witnesses that E. Jean Carroll's lawyers wanted to bring to trial, they can come and testify. And these are two women who allege that Donald Trump assaulted them in the past as well. Now, Trump had fought tooth and nail, had his lawyers fight tooth and nail, to bar the Access Hollywood tape from being played, to bar these witnesses. They went to court and said, "Hey, these women have nothing to do with this particular case. The tape has nothing to do with this case. Why should we let it happen?" Well, the judge, Judge Lewis Kaplan, said, "There is no reason, and Mr. Trump has made no persuasive argument, for me to rule differently. You want these things barred from trial, but why would I do that?" The judge says, "Like, you've given me no legal reason why they can't call these witnesses. You've given me no legal reason why we can't play the Access Hollywood tape. So by God, that tape is allowed. These witnesses are allowed. Oh, and by the way, one more thing the judge says. We were going to do the defamation lawsuit and the sexual assault lawsuit at the same time. You know, basically have them all rolled into one trial. And the judge says, you know what? We're not going to do that anymore. I'm going to make you go to trial twice. So we're going to do the sexual assault lawsuit, which, by the way, starts on April 25th. So mark your calendars next month. It's happening. And then we'll do the defamation lawsuit later on. So I'm not going to let you combine these things either. I am separating them. You're going to go through this hell twice. That's a pretty gutsy move from the judge. I love it. And I know that Donald Trump hates it, so I love it even more. But here's why this is so important. E. Jean Carroll, as we all know, alleges that Donald Trump, you know, she ran into him in a department store in the early 90s. It was a Bergdorf Goodman department store in Manhattan. They had been a little bit flirty with one another, you know, some banter back and forth. And then things turned ugly. He followed her into a dressing room, and that's where she alleges that he raped her. The only piece of evidence in the case is the outfit she was wearing from that day that has her attacker's DNA on it. As she alleges, obviously, it's Trump's DNA, but Trump would not give his DNA, so that piece of evidence isn't even actually a piece of evidence. Trump claimed, she's not my type, but when showed a picture of her at that time during a deposition, he thought it was his ex-wife. So clearly, she is your type. Like, you literally thought it was your ex-wife. But without the Access Hollywood tape, without the DNA, and without these other witnesses, all E. Jean Carroll has is her story. And I believe her story. Do not get me wrong. I do not want anybody to think I'm downplaying what happened to her or saying she's not telling the truth. I believe her 100%. But in a court of law, where you have to prove the defendant is guilty, the burden of proof is on you to prove they're guilty. If all you have is your word that it happened, you're not going to get a ruling in your favor at all. So lacking the DNA evidence, all they have is basically the ability to establish a pattern of behavior. And the only way they can do that, one, to play the Access Hollywood tape where Donald Trump is on tape saying, bragging about sexually assaulting women. So if you have that, that's a good start. And if you can bring in all of these other women who say that, listen, I wasn't a witness to what happened to Ms. Carroll, but I do know what happened to me, and here is the story. Basically, you paint this big picture in the courtroom that Donald Trump is, in fact, a sexual predator. Because that's the only evidence that you have at that point. You have to prove, based on the witnesses, based on the tapes, based on everything, that this is who he is, that this is what he does. And if you're able to establish that, it's easier to convince a jury that your story is true and accurate. If those things had been taken away by the courts, this case would have a 0% chance of being successful. It all hinged on whether or not the tape and those witnesses were allowed in court. And thanks to Judge Lewis Kaplan, they will be. So that takes care of the third growing legal problem that Trump faced this month. So before we get to what's happening in DC, let's quickly go down to Georgia. You know, that investigation. This week, Donald Trump had his legal team file a motion in Fulton County in court on Monday that, quote, according to Talking Points memo here, the motion seeks to quash and expunge the grand jury report, suppress all evidence that the grand jury gathered, and bar Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis from using the report to investigate the matter further. So basically what Trump's lawyers did is they went to court and said, hey, judge, just throw it all out. Like, would you do us a big favor and just throw this all away? Let's forget any of it happened and we'll all move on with our lives and it's over. Bold move, I gotta say, like, just going to court and saying, hey, judge, what if we just forget all this nonsense? I know they had a grand jury for 8 months and they got a lot of evidence. They talked to Lindsey Graham and Rudy Giuliani, and we got the videotapes of that woman letting the people in that Sidney Powell sent down to take all the info out of the voting machines. But what if, now hear me out, what if we just threw it all away? That's what this motion is essentially asking for. Now, the judge has not issued a ruling on this, but let me explain this to you a little bit. What they're doing is nothing more than a delay tactic. They know that the judge is not going to throw the entire case out. He is not going to throw all the evidence out. But first you start big. And then when you lose on the big thing, then you break it apart. Because in the judge's ruling, when it comes down, the judge is going to say the request was too broad. And that's the legal strategy here. They do it so that they can get a ruling and pick apart the judge's words to then refile. That's the point. That's the delay tactic, because every time they refile, it's going to delay things. So you ask the judge to throw the whole thing out, and the judge is going to say, well, I can't throw the whole thing out. And then they'll say, oh, okay, but you said you can't throw the whole thing out, but that means you may throw some parts out. So then piece by piece, they're going to file new motions saying, okay, we're going to file a motion to throw out testimony from Lindsey Graham. Maybe the judge says yes, maybe the judge says no. After that, we're going to file a motion to throw out testimony from Rudy Giuliani. Maybe the judge says yes, maybe the judge says no. And so on and so forth until they delay this to the point where everybody even forgets it happened. That is their game here. That is what they're trying to do. Now, the other part of the story, big story from CNN this week about racketeering and conspiracy charges against Donald Trump and his co-conspirators for what happened in Georgia. According to this new CNN report, it appears that Fulton County DA Fannie Willis is in fact looking at RICO charges when the indictments finally do come down. Now, that is definitely an interesting way to go. It's also not unexpected, by the way, because let's not forget, when she had that special grand jury impaneled, she brought in experts in racketeering. Like, she brought in prosecutors whose specialty is RICO. So it's been obvious from the beginning that she wanted to go after that racketeering charge in order to charge all of the co-conspirators at the same time, with the same level of intensity. So CNN, with their new report this week, kind of doubles down on that. They say that conversations with investigators, conversations with prosecutors, it all seems to be pointing straight towards that racketeering, which of course is bad news for Donald Trump. Because maybe he wasn't the guy pulling all the strings. But if you're going to hit him with RICO, then it doesn't matter if he wasn't pulling all the strings, if he was only pulling one or two. You can pop him for everything at that point. So that's why that is so important. And it also means that a couple of the other Trump allies, maybe Giuliani, maybe Lindsey Graham, definitely, I imagine, Sidney Powell, it means all of them are probably going to be charged as well. So we could see when those indictments come out of Georgia, which the timetable on that is kind of speeding up a bit, we could likely see a lot of major players in the Republican Party taken down. Maybe not Lindsey Graham, you know, maybe that's wishful thinking. But if you can get Giuliani, if you can get Sidney Powell, I mean, heck, if you can get some Republican officials in the state of Georgia, I'd say that's a big deal, of course, on top of Donald Trump. So that's what is happening in the state of Georgia. And it's also worth noting, of course, that one of the reasons that Trump's lawyers went to the judge and said, hey, judge, do us a favor, throw it all away, is because they're trying to use the weird and erratic interviews and information that the jury forewoman revealed just a week or so ago, however long that was. And certainly she didn't do the special grand jury any favors, but let me explain for a moment why none of that matters. The grand jury that this woman was a forewoman of, I mean, and look, she embarrassed herself to the point where Saturday Night Live did a skit and the guy, you know, doing the parody of Trump introduced her as his new best friend because that's how much they believe she helped his case. Here's why it doesn't matter. that special grand jury was only on a fact-finding mission. Because of that, because they could not issue criminal charges or indictments, I think you're going to have a hard time making the argument that it was tainted. These are just people looking for things. They may have been biased, sure. Every person has their own biases. But to argue that those biases somehow affected the fact-finding? Like, that doesn't make any sense because it doesn't change the facts that they found. So that person can go out there, you know, make a fool of herself, look very weird on TV, all she wants. It's not going to change the fact that they actually uncovered evidence that is now in front of the real grand jury, the criminal grand jury. And that's the grand jury that's going to vote on whether or not to issue these indictments against Donald Trump. And that's all that matters, what this current grand jury does. So I don't think Trump has a legal leg to stand on. I know some legal experts may disagree with me on that. But based on the way I see it, I do not think for a second that this case is in trouble because of that forewoman. All right, we're getting close, folks. We've covered Manhattan, the three issues he's having there. We've talked about Georgia. Let's now make our way to Washington, D.C., and Special Prosecutor Jack Smith and his investigation. It was revealed at the end of last week by the Washington Post that the United States Department of Justice has in their possession, as part of their investigation into Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election results, they have in their possession a report that Donald Trump's campaign spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on. And this report, conducted by the Berkeley Research Group and a team of scientists, says that there was no fraud in the 2020 election that would rise to the level of affecting the results. Now, the Berkeley Research Group and their team of scientists, they were paid $600,000 by Trump to produce this report to back up his claims. They looked in Wisconsin, they looked in Arizona, they looked in New Mexico, basically they looked in Georgia, they looked at all of these places that Trump had said, no, all of these states were screwy, dead people were voting, and so that's why I lost. So they pay this group $600,000, go find it, go find all this fraud to back up our claims so we can take it to court. The group goes out there, they do their investigation, they do their due diligence, they bring it all back to Trump in their final report, and they say, listen, you got nothing. Can't back up any of your claims. Nothing you said happened. Did we find a couple instances of voter fraud? Heck yeah, we did. Of course, most of it was actually Republicans voting twice or getting ballots for their dead relatives and voting for you in their name. But other than that, you know, nothing really big here. So why does that report matter? Is that what you're wondering right now? I hope it is, because I'm about to tell you. In order for Trump, assuming he gets indicted for conspiracy to defraud the United States, which is what the charges would be if he gets charged with election interference or whatever, his only possible legal defense, and this is according to pretty much every election and legal expert out there, the only way he could escape a conviction if indicted is to claim that he genuinely, full-heartedly believed that the election was stolen. At that point, if he did genuinely think these things that he was saying, his actions in the eyes of the law, you know, not in our eyes, obviously, not in mine, not in yours, but in the eyes of the law, they became legitimate actions at that point. And therefore, there's no conspiracy because he actually believed it. This report is almost, and I'll say almost, I'm not going to say it definitely is, it's almost a smoking gun that shoots Donald Trump's defense right through the face. Because he cannot go to court now and say, no, I really thought this had happened. Because the DOJ that now has this report, as I said, is going to hold up that report and say, did you see this? Do you know what this is? He's going to say, yeah, I know what that is. Can you tell us what this report says? You say, yeah, it said all these things, but I don't believe it. Oh, no. So this report, do you know who paid for it? Yeah, I paid for it. Do you know how much you paid for it? Yeah, I paid $600,000 for it. So you paid $600,000 to a group to lie to you? I mean, they're working for you. They have all the incentive in the world to prove your claims. And even with all that money, even with all that, you know, pressure on them, they still came back to you and said, you're lying. At that point, when this happens in court, if we get to that point, yeah, that's not going to be a good day for Donald Trump. Definitely not a good day for Donald Trump. So that is the update on the election investigation happening with Jack Smith. On the document side of the Jack Smith special prosecutor investigation, we have two revelations. And I'm sorry, I have to laugh at this point, folks, because I have already been through five investigations and lawsuits so far that had these major developments just in the last 7 days. Technically, all of them within the last 5 days. And we're still not even done yet. That's how legally bad Donald Trump's week has been. Like, I've already been through five, and I've still got to go through, actually, technically, looking at my notes here, I got six and seven. So on the document side, here's what happened. Last Friday, it was revealed that the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, has sent out, quote, dozens of subpoenas to staffers at Mar-a-Lago. Now, some of these staffers work directly for Donald Trump. They worked for him at the White House. They went with him down to Mar-a-Lago. They still work for him, you know, in a personal capacity, maybe in a campaign capacity. But either way, they work directly for Donald Trump. So he wants their information about what they know about the documents. I'm not interested in those people, right? Those are Trump loyalists. They're going to do whatever it takes. It's the other people that were subpoenaed that interest me. Because here is what a CNN report had to say. Smith, special prosecutor Jack Smith, has sought testimony from a range of people close to Trump, from his own attorneys who represent him in the matter to staffers who work on the grounds of Mar-a-Lago, including a housekeeper and restaurant servers, sources said. The staffers are of interest to investigators because of what they may have seen or heard while on their daily duties around the estate, including whether they saw boxes or documents in Trump's office suite or elsewhere. So why does that interest me so much? Why do I care if the housekeepers are going in there saying, yeah, I saw boxes? Why do I care if the servers, why do I care if the line cooks are getting subpoenaed by Jack Smith? Like, what do they know? Oh, if you're asking that question, you've never worked in a restaurant, have you? If you know, you know. That's probably the best way I can say that. Here's why this is important. It's not just because of staff gossip, right? Staff tells staff things, who then tells other staff things, and so on and so forth. We get it. The thing is, if you're a prosecutor, you don't just send out random subpoenas. You don't just go through a building and say, okay, the building is under investigation. I'm going to subpoena you. That's not what happens. You subpoena the people you know were involved first. That's step one. After that, after you talk to those people and they tell you more names, they mention somebody in passing, then you go and you subpoena those people. Eventually, you talk to enough people and you get more names. So these housekeepers, these servers, these staffers that have been subpoenaed, it wasn't random. It's because their names had to have come up in other conversations that Jack Smith has had with people in the course of this investigation. That's why this is so interesting to me. That's why this is so important. What do these staffers know? When did they know it? And who out there gave them their names? You don't name somebody when you're sitting for a deposition or you're sitting for questioning unless that person knows something. That's why that is so important to me. That's why I think these staffers are a very big deal. Not only that, But let's look at the different kinds of people. The lawyers that were subpoenaed, and there's another development on that I get to in a minute. The lawyers have it in their own interest to protect Donald Trump. The staffers who went from the White House to Mar-a-Lago to follow him in their careers, they have an incentive to protect Donald Trump. You think those housekeepers have any incentive to protect Donald Trump? Do you think the servers at the restaurant in Mar-a-Lago have any incentive to protect Donald Trump? No. No, they don't. Because what's the worst thing that would happen? He fires them? Oh my God. Do you know the number one industry here in the state of Florida where Mar-a-Lago is? It's the hospitality and tourism industry. So if you get fired as a housekeeper at a hotel, you could probably take a walk down the block and find another hotel that needs a housekeeper. Not saying I want people to lose their job, not downplaying how hard it is to go through a job search, but I'm just saying if you lose your job as a server in the state of Florida, if there's one thing you can find in this state, it's another job as a server. So these people have no reason to hold back. They have no reason to protect Trump. There is an industry begging for more workers. So if they lose their job at Mar-a-Lago or leave after having testified against Trump, they'll go down to the resort down the street, get the same job, same, you know, quality, and they'll be just fine. That's why those people are so important to me. And I think that's why they're so important to Jack Smith. And finally, also on the document case, U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell, who unfortunately she did step down on Monday, but before she stepped down, she issued a ruling saying that Trump attorney Evan Corcoran is not protected by attorney-client privilege and that he does have to go back and testify once again in front of Jack Smith and the grand jury. Evan Corcoran is, of course, the lawyer who drafted the memo, the sworn memo, signed by other Trump lawyer Christina Bob, who, by the way, Bob has hired a lawyer in this matter, that said, in June of 2022, we have searched the property. There are no documents. We have done a good faith search, whatever. There are no more classified documents here. We swear it. We affirm it. Here's our document. Trump said he's got nothing. We're good to go. That's what the document said. That is what Corcoran likely testified in front of his first appearance in the grand jury, which took place in January. But prosecutors, Jack Smith, he wasn't happy with it. He said, I want more. And then Corcoran said, well, I'd love to tell you more, but you know, I got attorney-client privilege here, so I don't have to say anything. So the DOJ took him to court, and the judge said, oh yeah, you do. You got a lot more to say. In fact, here's six specific line items that you've claimed attorney-client privilege on that I am waiving privilege because of the crime fraud exception, because the DOJ has at least put enough evidence out there to suggest, not prove in court, but to suggest that Donald Trump committed a crime. That is what the judge said. So, Evan Corcoran's got to go back. In fact, on Wednesday, because this ruling just came out a couple days ago, but then on Wednesday, they had filed an emergency appeal. The appeals court said, no, we're not gonna block Evan Corcoran. He's going to go and testify because we believe Trump committed a crime. But here's the kicker. Based on the rulings, it does not appear that the courts believe that Evan Corcoran committed a crime by drafting the basically lying document. But they think Trump did. So here's what we believe is happening right now. And of course, Trump flipped his lid when this news came out, yada, yada. I don't care about his response. What the DOJ thinks happened was that Evan Corcoran was lied to by Donald Trump. Lying to somebody in order to get them to give a false statement, even if they don't know it's a false statement, to federal investigators is in itself a crime. Tricking somebody into accidentally giving fake testimony, false testimony to federal authorities is a crime. So Evan Corcoran could have genuinely believed when Trump told him, oh yeah, don't worry. We looked and looked and looked. There's no more documents. Go ahead and write up your sworn affidavit. We're good to go. Don't you worry about it, buddy. But Trump knew the documents were there. He knew he was lying to Evan Corcoran, and he knew that his lie to Evan Corcoran would result in Corcoran lying to federal authorities. That is the crime that the DOJ thinks Trump committed in just that one instance. So this would be a new crime that we did not yet know, and that the DOJ likely didn't know, that Donald Trump likely committed. In addition to, of course, the illegal storage of the documents, the illegal retention of the documents, all of that. Now Trump's got another possible charge coming against him. And there you have it, folks. 7 updates on all of the different investigations and or lawsuits that Donald Trump is facing. As of right now, that gets you all up to date. God only knows what is going to happen in the future. I mean, look, the news could be changing tomorrow. It could be changing as you're listening to this. But I think it's safe to say at this point, this is my takeaway. I want to end with this. If at least one of these investigations doesn't result in indictments, then we may as well go ahead and hand Donald Trump a golden crown and say, you're just the king of the United States at this point, because nothing will take you down. I have to imagine, out of everything I've talked about today, at least one thing is going to result in an indictment against this man and a conviction. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think we can make it happen. And that's all the time we have for this week's Ring of Fire. I appreciate everybody tuning in. It's been fun. I hope I never have to do a special episode on just Donald Trump's crimes again. Trust me, there are actual other news stories out there. And if you want those, by the way, go sign up, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I do talk about other things every day. This stuff with Trump this week, though, was just too much. I had to put it all into one action-packed Trump legal episode. And don't forget, you can follow me, Farron Cousins, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I'm at Farron Balanced across all of those. Tune in to America's Lawyer with Mike Papantonio and myself. It airs on our YouTube channel every Thursday at 2 p.m. Central. And you can now follow Ring of Fire on TikTok. We are at Ring of Fire Media. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you next time.